Lovelies, welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is filmmaker Kelly Walker. Her newest project, My Fiona, is a gut-wrenching look at loss and grief as experienced by the people left behind, how they deal with it, how they shatter from it, and how sometimes the love you have for your lost one can bring you closer to the people that loved her too. My Fiona stars Jeanette Moss, Corbin Reed, Sarah Amini, and Eloem Nikolov as the adorable Bailey. It's currently in theaters and will be available on demand November 23rd on all major streaming platforms. You can get more information at myfionafilm.com. Now grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show. This episode is brought to you by Jonathan of Jonathan Rackman Designs. Jonathan is an internationally recognized interior designer based out of San Francisco, California. He is one of America's top designers, and he has been featured in Elle, Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, The English Home, Travel and Leisure, Dolce, House Beautiful, and Luxe, just to name a few. Jonathan's memoir, The Garlic Peanut Story, is available on his website, jonathanrackman.com. 100% of the proceeds go to children's charities around the world. Jonathan wrote this memoir as a way to connect with his beloved sister's children and to tell he and Wewe's story so that they would know what a loving, accepting, and supporting person she was. Thank you to Jonathan for sharing his story with the world and for being a friend to the show. So let's jump right in. This film, I don't do spoilers. So if I start to talk about something that like you don't want people to know, just be like, eh-eh.
All right.
I have not been so touched by a film in such a long time because I don't, and I'm not saying at all that this is like a romantic comedy, but I don't watch that type of film. I like to watch horror, sci-fi, but in this position that I'm in, I watch a lot of different things. And this one got me. It was like a gut punch, you know? I mean, so phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Take me back to the inspiration.
Yeah. So the original inspiration was when I was 12 years old, my babysitter passed away from suicide. Oh. And it was kind of this like moment where you're a child one day and the next you're like, anyone can go at any time. The world is not safe. There was no like idea of how to even move through grief. We didn't talk about that, you know? And, so that was kind of where it started. And then at the time there had been like rumors that maybe she'd been misprescribed antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
So then like 20 years later, I want to say my brother's friend, similar experience, a wrong prescription. Mm-hmm. Say he left us the same way she did. Mm-hmm. And I got really, really angry. I was like, someone has to be talking about this. Someone has to like call awareness to it. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just go to high schools and talk about this myself. And I was like, Kelly, you didn't even go to college. No one's going to let you talk at a high school. So I was like, all right, I'm going to write this into a film. So at the same time, this is 2016. I was kind of starting to put a voice to my bisexuality. And the people like closest to me knew, but I was like, this would be a really great way to kind of understand my relationship to that. So kind of blending that gray shade of sexuality and the gray shades of grief kind of became my Fiona.
That's awesome. And it's so funny because I don't think people realize that the same things, the same feelings, the same emotions happen no matter what your sexual orientation is.
Yeah.
You freaking mourn just the same, no matter who you are, what you are, what you identify as. Grief doesn't care, you know?
No.
Grief doesn't care if you like boys, if you like girls, if you like both. They don't care.
Yeah, it's transcendent. And I think it's also that idea of trauma bonding too. Trauma bonding is so much more than, how we sexually identify.
Mm-hmm. And now here's a question I have for you. Jane, She didn't present that way at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it felt like to me that Gemma and Jane came together because they both loved the same person, just in different ways, obviously. And then that brought them together, which was, I mean, I was like, oh, she's, I said, her and Alec are going to get, no, no, it didn't happen. And yeah. isn't that strange?
I like to think that Jane and Gemma kind of maybe got together for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But in my head, like a couple years later, maybe like 5 or 6 years later, they refined each other again. Now I did the spoiler alert. Oh, well.
Okay. It's fine. Yeah. And they live happily ever after.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so funny because I was like, okay, I didn't see that. That's not where I thought it was going. And I was fine with it, but it wasn't, it was just like a little plot twist, but it worked. And I think you're right. I think a lot of times people will hook up or, you know, be together when they wouldn't necessarily be together.
And I think if you look at the spiritual idea of that too, it's like, and this is going so hippy trippy, but what if Fee was on earth to bring Gemma and Jane together? And that was the purpose of Fee and that, you know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I think about. And I know people that have gotten together with the person that's passed away, their spouse or their husband or their wife. And I've been really fascinated by that for a very long time. I had a boyfriend die when I was 21.
Oh God. I'm sorry.
Well, he was 21. Sorry. I was 17. And it was just like, I'm telling you, there's some grief. I feel like I can speak on grief. I remember, I'm like, I hope he doesn't listen to this. I remember finding his best friend very attractive, like the year after. And I was like, no, I'm not into him. I was never into him before. Like, what is this like newfound attraction? And it was because he and I were the only two people that were carrying that same weight. Cause it's different for a parent, you know, a parent's going to have a very different relationship to their child's death. But when it's a peer of the same age, there's, I mean, it's all bets are off.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's like having a piece of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're both on the inside of the sadness or the inside of the joke, depending on what part of your grief you're in.
Right. It's so strange. You said something and I was going to address, but I can't remember what it was now. Oh, Fiona. Yeah. It's so funny that you said that because if it was like real, Fiona's up in heaven or wherever going, well, what the hell?
Or she's going, I always hoped this would happen.
Yeah. Depending on her mood that day.
Yeah, for real.
But it was surprising to me because Jane is just like, why did this happen? What the hell? Why did she do it? And Gemma's just like, not that she was like blasé about it, you know, she was just like, it happened, I'm moving forward. But you could tell she was keeping a lot of stuff inside because those little outbursts and little snarky things, you know, when people tried to talk to her, and it's people that seem like they're okay that are going to be like the time bombs later on. But
yeah.
But yeah, Jane was just like, I got to know why. I got to know why. And I was kind of there with her because the event, when it happens, you're like, what happened? What the hell? What? And then you led into it so gradually that when it happened, it wasn't, you know, when you, the reveal or the discussion, it wasn't like a shocker. It wasn't like, oh my God, where is this coming from? But it wasn't like, oh, I saw that coming 15 minutes ago. You know,
oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it wouldn't be a shocker, right? Because I don't think it's something, I don't think that's true to life. I usually think there's so many little pieces that amount to someone making a very important decision for themselves, like Fiona did.
Right.
And then like with grief too, it's like Jane is like the version of active grief, right? Where she has to, it's like an active experience. And then Gemma's is very passive grief. And that's the thing is like, we don't grieve the same and we don't ever. And that's, what's interesting too, is we don't always grieve different people the same way we grieved the last person that passed. Cause I've seen that in my life too, where how one experience shaped me was very different from the other. So it's not like you go through it and go, all right, I know what I'm going to do next time. Like you have no say in it. And that was another thing. I really wanted to just give people permission to celebrate the messiness of grief and not look at their experience as right or wrong and just simply as is. Because I think society, I think we've kind of been taught that grief is something we go through and get out of. And yeah. It's like, and you know, I at times with grief, I feel like people are kind of checking their watch, being like, oh, she's still talking about this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's people that haven't been taught enough about grief or haven't experienced it enough that they can't lend mm-hmm. that empathy to that. It's a forever experience. It yeah. doesn't, you know, I read something the other day. It's like, you don't get over it. You learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. It was, I think I said that in the film. There's something I read yesterday was better than what I said, but, yeah, I mean, I think cause Paul, the boyfriend, he died when I was, so that would have been 17 years ago, 15 years wow. ago.
Yeah.
And there was a moment 5 months ago where I started crying and I didn't think I was going to stop. And that's over a decade ago, mm-hmm. but it was hitting me. I can't remember what the trigger was, but it hit me like I just gotten the phone call that day.
Yeah.
And I felt my heart completely falling apart again. I was like, who's going to pick up the pieces? And so it is, it's just something that you just go, all right, this is my story now. Right. And I have to honor who I am inside my own story. And I might not always be the kindest version of myself. And mm-hmm. that's okay.
Right. Well, grief is not like a 10-day dose of antibiotics. It's, no. it's, you know, it's blood pressure medicine for the rest of your life. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I have a friend yeah. I went to school with, and I am not on like Facebook because it got way too political. And I was just like, so anyways,
you're like, bye.
I was like, bye. But for some reason, I think the only way I remember birthdays was on Facebook. So I was thinking that it was somebody's birthday. Anyway, so I went on really quick to just check and see. And this girl I went to school with, her son, adult son, well, ish, like 19 or 20, had been hit by a car and killed. And I was like, oh my God. And I thought to myself, I would kill myself. Honest to God. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't. And she was just like, and all the comments and everything to her, she was just like gracious. And she wasn't fine. Let me not say she was fine.
Of course not. But she was like showing up for her experience.
Yes.
She wasn't absolutely. Hiding from it. She wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing me like I would.
But I know. You surprise yourself. Yeah. You surprise yourself of how resilient we are. Even if your everything can be breaking, but you still somehow right. show up through it. I don't know. I can't imagine being a parent like that. I can't even.
Yeah, no. And I wonder if like there's these extenuating circumstances, because I know that not to make the show about me, but because I know that he had a daughter, like a baby daughter. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's all these little intricate pieces that fit into grief and affect how well you do, you know, or you don't. So,
yeah. And I think that if you look at Gemma, she had to keep it together because she has a son. Mm-hmm. Like she doesn't have the opportunity like Jane does where she can, you know, sticky tape her curtains shut and mm-hmm. not cancel her business. You know, she's got to keep going
and not smoke in bed.
Exactly.
But yeah. Oh, and by the way, the kid that plays Bailey is adorable.
Isn't he the best?
And he was so good. Like with the tantrums good. And things.
Oh my gosh. Like, oh my God. He was so cute during that scene. He kept like not going like all in for the tantrum, but he'd been telling me like leading up to it was the scene he was most excited to shoot. And I was like, what is happening? Like, I know he can do it. So Jeanette, who plays Jane, she came to me in between takes. She's like, okay, so he's afraid of hurting the sound guy's ears because of the lob and the boom. Mm-hmm. I was like, of course a kid would be like thinking of the sound guy over there. And I just like, I had Jacob, I think, just take the headphones off. I was like, let it rip, Ella. Like, you got this. Mm-hmm. And then we got the take that is in the film. But he was just amazing to work with. Oh my gosh. There's nothing like working with a talented and Ella is he's an old soul. There's nothing like that. If you get talent and an old soul in a child, like you're in their space mm-hmm. and you can just fully trust whatever they, whatever they're going to show up with, it's going to be what it's going to be. And, you know, he's obviously directable, but he was just so confident and he was just so sure of the story he wanted to tell. And it felt like working with someone of the same age. Like it didn't feel like, cause I'd heard I'd heard some tricks on how to like direct kids. And day one, I was like, all right, no, we're on the same page here, buddy. Like we're good.
Yeah, throw out all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And he's how old?
He was, I want to say he was 9 when we shot.
Okay. So he's got like 9 years of conditioning to not lose his mind in public.
I know. Oh my God. He's the best.
He's like, wait, it's okay.
Yeah.
I can throw a fit on the playground. Okay.
Yeah.
Mom, she said it was fine. Yeah. But he was sweet. So good. With
and
all
he
of
and
that.
Jeanette, who plays Jane, the two of them had this just such a special relationship on set. Like it was so great. Cause I couldn't give him as much attention as I would have wanted to, cause there's, you know, so many fires mm-hmm. to put out, and she just took him under her wing, and they would do, you know, cartwheels in the backyard. They were always goofing around. And Alec, the Ryan Garcia who plays Alec, they would have like Nerf gun wars through the set. And so it was like this perfect blend of like work and play.
Well, right. And you've got that lightheartedness added to, you know, dark subject matter that keeps you balanced.
Yeah.
So you're not just like crying in your trailer at the end of the day.
No, God, you can't. And that's true to life too. It's like grief doesn't pause sunshine. It doesn't pause good weather. It doesn't pause the other great things that are happening in life at the same time. Like you have to honor that it all coexists together, unfortunately, even when you don't want it to.
Right. I mean, what is it? Smash Mouth. I'm the kind of guy that laughs at a funeral.
Yeah, totally.
My brother and I, we got so many side eyes at my aunt's funeral because we couldn't. We had to pretend we were coughing, and we weren't laughing at this, at her. We were just, we kind of caught each other's faces because we were just like so, like, and we caught each other's faces kind of like this, and we were like, and then the little, you know, the little meal or whatever afterwards, and you know, the fellowship hall of the church, or laughter, music. And I think that's the best way that people want to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to sit and, or maybe they do, depending on the person. They don't want you to tear your hair and wrench your clothing. You know, they want you to bust out a couple lines of Sweet Caroline, or, you know, tell jokes and be like, hey, remember when, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I feel like Jane and Gemma never really, I mean, they had small moments of remember when, or remember the,
yeah,
you know, the quirky thing that
I feel was, like,
yeah.
Well, I feel like their relationships were so exclusive to like Jane and Fiona and Gemma and Fiona. And I wanted to write it like they weren't, like almost like these two women were strangers that happened to be in the mm-hmm. same room enough times where it was cordial. But then you take Fiona out of the equation, you're like, I don't know this person.
And we have nothing to talk about except.
Except her. But then you start to realize like, oh, these two people are drastically different, but also really good for where they are in their experience with mm-hmm. this, you know? But yeah, they have their small moments. They have their ways of, I like how when Jane kind of gives Gemma permission in Fiona's bedroom to be like, you know, if you want to cry, cry, like be whatever you got to be, you know, there's no judgment mm-hmm. here. And I like that Gemma's a little tough on Jane. I like that she's not letting her sit in her mess mm-hmm. for too long. You know, she's not babying her. And right. Ruth doesn't baby her either.
No, I love Ruth.
Yeah.
I absolutely love her. Don't pot my
house. Dope.
No dope.
I wrote that character based on my grandma. She's very similar.
Oh, that's so sweet.
But my grandma did not see it. She was like, I was like, what do you think of the grandma character? She was, I didn't like her.
Oh no.
Well, I was like,
Well, you know, did she let you smoke dope in the house? I mean, come on.
God, no. God, if we left my grandma's house after 9 p.m., she'd just lock the doors and turn the alarm on and we wouldn't have a key.
Oh, wow.
Like I've slept in my car at my grandma's before.
As an adult.
As an adult.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's intense. She's Ruth.
Grandmas are the best though.
Are they? No, I love my grandma. She's great.
So, yeah. So Jane is like, she's borderline train wreck. I wouldn't say she's complete train wreck because she can keep her stuff together for Bailey. And to a degree, she keeps it together for Gemma, but I think she's a little more prickly with Gemma because I felt like, to me, definite jealousy of each one's relationship with Fiona, definite jealousy. And Gemma Corbin, she had that look down pat, like, you know, like, I'm not here for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but jealousy is also often, it goes hand in hand, that heated, you know, that anger or heatedness or jealousy goes hand in hand with passion. So it wasn't surprising.
Yeah.
That they, you know, that they bonded and, you know, and went there. But I don't feel like it, what is it in Speed where, like, you know, relationships forged in the heat of not necessarily something that can be maintained unless there's other elements that are added to it.
Yeah. I think I know what you're saying. I think for my thoughts on Jane, like when I was writing her, definitely written based on the way I handle some situations. Mm-hmm. So when my dad said, she's a bitch, I was like, oh, buddy, you're talking about me now. Like, now we're mm-hmm. gonna, that's getting personal. I think she was someone that she didn't take time to almost form her own opinion. Mm-hmm. So then there's no filter of what she, you know, she's so fiercely loyal to Fee, but then there's no filter of how she like kind of shows up for Fee after Fee passes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of comes into that kind of messy way she's handling everything and at times very inappropriate, like with the funeral guests. But at mm-hmm. the same time, I think if I'd heard that at a funeral, I think I'd probably do something similar. Yeah. Like I'm better now, but when I was younger, mm-hmm. I would realize after the fact, like, ooh, went too far.
Shouldn't have said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just said all those things in my head and I didn't even like take time to like listen before they were already out there. Mm-hmm. So I think Jane's just kind of got that attitude. I just don't think she's like fully adulted yet. And it's mm-hmm. because she never really had to, because I think she always got to be under Fee's wing. She always got to be under Fee's care in a way.
Right.
And that's why I was really selective about the flashback scenes. Like, I didn't want to have a ton of them just because I thought like at that point we're living too much in this other world, this alternate reality that no longer exists. But mm-hmm. I did want to show in the flashbacks, just like that fine line of Fee having her best friend Jane, but also she's the carer of Jane and she's mm-hmm. the carer of Bailey and she's the carer of the business and she's Gemma's wife. And like, I think that's a lot to put on one person. And it's kind of what Jane then puts on Gemma, you know, she kind of projects that same thing until she kind of figures it out. But yeah. And that jealousy of the jealousy and grief too, I think we get this need for ownership over the person mm-hmm. that's passed. And I think it's because I thought a lot about it. I think it comes from that person's no longer there to validate your relationship, whether it have been romantic, friendship, father, daughter, whatever it is. They're not there to say, yes, we are this. So now mm-hmm. you're kind of left alone and it's like, you have to remind everyone, because truly you're reminding yourself that they were important to you because you were important to them. And then that's where it gets, you know, that's where I think the jealousy comes from. And I think jealousy comes from shame. So shame feeling like not good enough, not worthy enough. And I think probably Jane knew that Gemma was her number one, but Jane's number one was Fee.
Right.
You know, cause she didn't spend time becoming her own self and living her own life. And that was the name of the movie originally, was Jane Lives Her Life, like her as in Fee. Mm-hmm. And everyone said they didn't get it. So we changed it.
Well, I think it's sweetened to the point too.
My Fiona, yeah. My producer came up with that one.
It's very sweet. And it's to mm-hmm. the point. Honestly.
Yeah. Jane Lives Her Life was a little too, like, I must've smoked some pot and said, like, here's the name of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And My Fiona goes very well with that. You know, the My Sharona song.
Yeah. That was the one reason I was like, ooh, I don't know, but no, it's good.
Immediately the song was in my head when I saw the name, but it's perfect because it's almost like my
Fiona. The ownership thing. Yeah. That yeah. definitely that ownership that really, I mean, I'll call it unattractive. Like, I won't judge it, but it's a very unattractive quality in grief.
Oh, absolutely.
I 100% will take ownership of doing it when people have passed over.
Here, present.
We've done it. We've been there.
Screaming match after my grandmother's funeral. I mean,
yeah,
but
yeah,
it's fine. It's fine. We haven't spoken in years. It's fine. No, but
good.
That's so strange that like you said ownership and it immediately people know what you're talking about. It's like, oh yeah, because there's the reminiscing, but then there's the, oh, well, remember the time when we did such and such. It's like everybody can mourn. It's not, unless, you know, it's your husband, but everybody.
But even then, if it's your husband, it's your husband's sister. Like, then there's that, you know, I had him the first 20 years of his life. Then he met you at 20 and then you had him, but I still had those growing years. Mm-hmm. It's who's to say who had the truest form of the person that's gone. Right. Like, and they're not here to defend themselves, you know, it'd be like, hey, listen, by the way, I didn't actually like you. I was just, you know what I mean? Like, not that would have been Jane and Fee, but.
No, but yeah, it's like, just because my memory doesn't invalidate yours. My grief doesn't invalidate yours. Everybody can be, you know, messed up.
Coexisting. Everybody messed up, coexisting, sad, happy. Yeah.
So if we think about Gemma and Jane, do we think, we're speculating, do we think that this, the way that they came together, do we think this is something that could be built upon?
I think so. Originally there was a scene that was cut. There was originally a scene. We've got the lantern scene. And then
that was beautiful.
Thank you. I love that festival. If anyone's listening, Rise Festival, they have one in Nevada. They have a couple other ones around the country. It's where you ride on the lanterns and you lift it up into the sky. It's the most bucket list moment. I've done it twice now. I'll do it again next year. It's absolutely truly life-changing. You write your dreams on the lanterns. But so there's a moment in there where Fiona and Gemma meet. And there was an original, it was a scene that was cut out that we showed later in the film where Gemma saw Jane first.
Oh.
And was coming over to talk to Jane. And then Alec came over and then someone bumped into Gemma and she kind of landed into Fee. So when we did our first test screening, Sarah Amini, who plays Fiona, it was just so delightful. And just, even though she's got like the least amount of screen presence, the screen time, she has so much screen presence that I was watching it when it got to that scene, I felt ashamed that I would do that to Fiona.
How dare you?
Oh my, I was like, Fiona deserves so much more than ever knowing that Gemma looked at anyone but her, like, absolutely not. So we cut the scene. Like, I made my editor come back that night. I was like, I'm so ashamed. We have to like delete the scene. Like, it never happened. So when I was writing it though, my thoughts were always that Gemma and Jane, there was something there. It just never got to be explored, because I also believe you can be in love with one person and also, you know, curious about another. I don't think you get married and then that's it. And it was a conversation my husband and I were having yesterday, actually. I'm like, crushes happen. That's part of life. You don't, those vows don't negate humans, you know? So I think because they didn't really have much time together when Fiona was alive, that was never been able to explore, nor would they have acted on it. But I do think the grief brings them together. But I think had they gotten past that part of their relationship and kind of what happens to dissolve it, I think they could have really stood a chance.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was the time for it.
No.
Yeah. And I think truly, I think Jane goes on to date men and women. I don't think Gemma is the last woman she's with.
Yeah.
Now is another scene that was cut at the end where we see Jane texting with a date, but it's got a neutral name. Like, I can't remember now.
And like Robin.
Robin Riley, something like that. And it was like, okay, so is she, you know, and it was just like, again, it's that permission to like, to no longer define who she is by who she loves.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And she'll never forget Fiona.
Yeah.
Ever.
No, you don't. You don't forget Fiona. They're too special.
She definitely was the role of parent or caretaker.
The nurturer.
Yeah.
And it's hard to be the nurturer for too many people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You get worn out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get depressed.
Mm-hmm. And then you get resentful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially, this probably wasn't in the trailer, so I won't talk about it. But especially when your wife wants to do something that you don't want to do.
Yeah.
But what do you're so used to saying, you know, saying yes and being like, okay, sure, you know, I'll take care of it.
yeah, I'll figure it out. I'll deal with it when it actually happens. Or yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. I think that's like, yeah, I think that's like lack of communication in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also like the roles that we've taken on, it's our responsibility to dismantle the same role that we created for ourselves.
Right. Well, it's kind of like a situation where it's like, I don't remember if Jane specifically said this, but along the lines of, why would you make her do it? Or why would you ask her to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the implied answer was, well, she didn't say no. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's that's a very valid point. Yeah.
She's not going to say no.
Exactly.
But it's that, like, that's a thing to. Too.
When you have one parent that's working, you know, I mean, even my husband and I do this sometimes where it's like, he has a job that he has a specific time he has to be at his job. So if things happen and we need the plumber to come over, my job's freelance. I can write, you know, I can write here and there, but I prefer to keep myself on a schedule. But if it comes down to who's going to be home for the plumber and change their day, that's going to be me.
Right.
And you get just kind of, that just happens. That's just a natural thing. So kind of for Fiona's business. Yeah. She runs her own company. She's the first that's going to have to make compromises.
Right. And it doesn't mean she's not working.
No, God, no.
It just means she's a little more flexible.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. But it's not ideal. And it's one of the reasons I even like am hesitant to have children. Cause I'm like, I don't know. I mean, what happens if the child's homesick? I'm going to stay home. But my husband's like, I mean, TMI, but will be an amazing dad and he would stay home and do anything for his imaginary child.
Oh, well, he sounds like an amazing man.
He's also Alec in the movie.
Oh my God. Yeah. We just got the deep tea right here.
There it is. He had to audition though.
Oh,
yeah. Well, audition.
We can talk about that off camera.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, so in your situation, like you were saying, you know, you get it. It makes sense. It's the only, you know, it's the most reasonable option that you're the one who's going to have to switch up your schedule, but that doesn't mean that you're not like,
well, you know, resentment builds. Yeah. Not if there's lack of communication, like that's the difference between my husband and I, as we talk about this stuff, you right. know, but I don't right. think Gemma and Fee,
I think they know how to talk.
Yeah. I think at some point those conversations probably stopped happening in the way that felt equal to both of them. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes life just takes over and you forget that you're not just a mother. You're not just someone in your industry, an artist, a lawyer, you're a human with needs. And then we forget the road that's paved to speak on that. It's almost like we forgot our way.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I'm a huge advocate for therapy, couples counseling, self-help books. Like I think that's why I was really careful in the film to talk. I never wanted to talk poorly of our mental health, like caregivers,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause to me that's been like game changer in my life or my therapist. But I think it is just it starts at the top, it starts in corporate and funnels down. And these, you know, doctors have their hands tied in what they can and can't do. And that's the part that's truly frightening.
Right.
Is that they, you know, I think, especially like, you know, a psychiatrist, psychologist, like I think they got into the industry for the right reasons. And at some point, those reasons were no longer applicable to what they could and could not do as doctors. I think it was right. Dr. Drew. I heard him talking on a podcast once about just like how impossible it's gotten for him to help people. And he was like, close
that, yes. Right.
And he was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't have any say anymore. Like I have to, they tell me to do this. I have to do that. They said, you know, it's just like, insurance companies and and I have no soul for it. I have no, you know, I'm not going to go and protest because I don't think that's going to, I think it's just my hope with the movie is just, you know, being mindful of that and right. knowing that a doctor isn't always right and they don't always know what's best. And it's not because they don't care. It's because they're not capable of it with a constraints they're under. So we have to remember at the end of the day, it's like our responsibility to take care of our mental health above and beyond anyone we're paying money to do so.
Right.
You know, and then show up in that way. And, you know, telling your friends, telling your family, hey, I'm trying a new antidepressant. Will you let me know if things get a little funny in the next week? Like, be honest with me, or, you know, keeping a diary every single day pre starting a drug to going into it. And just really, I tested the theory this year actually, and realized how messed up the system was. I was like, it's just like the movie. And I had to go off it, and I didn't, and then my doctor wasn't calling me back. I'm like, do I wean myself off it? Do I just stop taking it? Like, is there going to be a difference? They're like, we'll put a post-it on his desk. I'm like, a post-it? What is happening? Like, anyway, yeah, I just think, yeah, we just got to be careful. Yeah. We just got to be mindful. We have to be in conversation with each other.
Right. Well, listen, I was a pharmacy technician for a long time. So just, you know, call me.
You know things.
I do. But I also believe I believe in the power of medications, but I also believe in the power of medications, if that makes sense, because medications as anything,
exactly what you mean.
They can help or they can harm. You just have to be very mindful. And I do know that there's a lot of anti-anxiety, antidepressants that if you go off them full turkey, you're running around with a butcher knife in your underwear. Not me personally, but because your body gets so, so dependent on it to keep you balanced that when you don't have it anymore, you are completely unhinged. Absolutely. It's,
yeah. I mean, some of these case studies I was reading were just like, I'm like, how is this knowledge public? Like, and it was just, I tried that Chantix years ago. Remember that one, the quit smoking one?
I'm allergic to it.
That was next level crazy. My boyfriend at the time, he was like, I'm going to break up with you if you keep smoking. So I jumped on Chantix, and within like a month and a half, he was like, I'm going to break up with you if you don't start smoking.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah. He was like, I can't handle this. This is, I don't know who you are.
Right. Well, Chantix is crazy. I'm sorry. I'm not allergic to that one. I was allergic. They put me on, the brand drug is Wellbutrin, but it was called something else for quitting smoking.
Yes. That's the one I just went on recently.
Okay.
I did not do well on it.
I am violently allergic to it. I was covered in hives. I was scratching till I had bruises everywhere. It took a month for it to, because the half-life, it took a month to get out of my system. I was miserable. And I also, oh my God, this is TMI, but I also had an ablation.
Oh my God.
It's a bad month, but yeah. So then they put me on the Chantix because the doctor was like, I don't think now is a good time for you to quit smoking. I'm like, really? Because, you know, but yeah, Chantix, I had to take a nausea pill and an Advil because it was instant headache, instant nausea. Yes,
I remember that.
I mean, it worked.
I mean, I guess it
didn't your work dreams,
the dreams, the Chantix dreams. I quite enjoy the Chantix dreams.
Right. Because I already have a vivid like dream pattern. It was just like, oh wow, this is even more intense.
But I was like here for the dreams, but not the, I would go from like 0 to 10 anger on stuff that didn't matter. And I was so invested in that anger. It was quite frightening.
Right.
There was a man that killed someone on the drug years ago.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it's prescribed a lot.
Yeah. And it's like, also if you drink on it, you black out.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. That happened to my mom and it was awful. But again, it's like, you know, the Chantix is a popular drug. In fact, like in the sense that people talk about it, they talk about these like pretty loopy side effects, but you don't have that with all the other anxieties, antidepressants. And
Right.
So it's,
well, the Wellbutrin, it works. I just had a violent allergic reaction to it. I don't think, look at us talking about this stuff. I don't think that you're supposed to drink with that one too. So double check.
You're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you like projectile vomiting and passing out.
I'm good.
Well, congratulations on quitting. That's awesome.
Well, we'll see. I'm back again.
I'm manifesting it for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Very, very soon.
That's amazing. I know that the film has been just sweeping the festivals, picking up awards, all the awards. picking them up here and there. They're still going. It's still out there cruising the festivals.
We have two more in North America, and then I don't know if we'll do Europe festivals or if we'll just go straight to international distribution. I haven't kind of figured it out, but now that it's out next week, November 23rd, VOD.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. Now that once it's out, it's kind of like the festivals are done. And it was really scary with the festivals because we didn't know, because we were supposed to premiere in March 2020 at London BFI's Flares Festival. And yeah, we had
thanks, COVID.
Yeah, seriously. And it's funny. I do tarot reads, and I kept doing tarot reads leading up to going to London. Mm-hmm. And it just, everything I would see was like, oh, it's not going to happen. And I'm like, no, it's happening. Our showtime show sold out under an hour. Mm-hmm. It was like all this amazing stuff was happening leading up to it. I'm like, it's definitely happening. But everything I was seeing in the cards was like, it's not. So then I was like, oh, it must mean that I'm not going to make it. Like I'm going to get into a car accident. Something's going to happen to me and I'm not going to get to go to to London. So then I started driving very slowly and being like super careful. And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, this is what the tarot was referring to. Got it. So it was when we lost our world premiere, it was like, kind of like, do you go online virtually? Do you hold off? What do you just release it now? Like we had no idea what to do. And there's no one you can call because no one's gone through it. Mm-hmm. So it was like a year of really of trying to prepare myself that there's a good chance this film missed the boat and just will be chalked up to a learning experience and some amazing friendships that I made. Right. And I kind of gotten like in a place of like, if that's all it is, I still got a lot, not what I was mm-hmm. expecting, but I still like, I'm grateful for it. So to have the run we had this year was like above and beyond. I was so, so grateful. And I wish I could have gone to more physical festivals because a lot of them still went virtual. Mm-hmm. And then it was just hard to travel to the ones that were physical for all of them. But the ones I went to, we just met amazing filmmakers, amazing programmers, the audience, everyone was so excited to be in person again. And mm-hmm. it was such an amazing, amazing time.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had to suffer that disappointment to get that joy.
Yeah. 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 And really appreciate it, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really changes your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you did, you know, you read the cards and your instant thought is, oh, I'm dying. Because me.
Yeah, that's what you did too.
Yeah. Oh, those intrusive thoughts that,
oh my gosh.
I mean, yeah, like they would always call me a worry wart when I was a kid.
I'm worried about everyone else dying than myself. This is the first time that I thought it would be me, because that's, I was awesome. Like, I'm like, how is the film? The film is there. The film is done. The film isn't, you know. To me, that was the only rational thought, was that I was not going to be around for it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, what, the cards are right.
The cards are right.
It's like you couldn't have a card with like a sick person coughing.
I know. Seriously, the next edition of Rider Waite, they'll have to put that in there.
It's just a little cough or a little mask.
Yeah. Oh, great. We've got another pandemic coming, guys. It was funny too, because I was reading some of my actor friends around the same time. And I had one friend and she was like, just got new agents. And she was, you know, everything on paper looked like she was going to have a really good pilot season of auditioning. And I'm reading for her. I'm like, I don't know, girl. I'm like, I'm looking and it doesn't look good for you. And she's like, look again. She's like, I'm look like, again. This is going to be a good season. I was like, I know. I hear you. I'm like, but nothing's going to happen for you. I'm sorry. I felt so awful. And then I was like, oh, that's because it got canceled. You know,
it's like, it wasn't you. It wasn't you.
Yeah, I did. I called her. I was like, guess what? Guess what? So I remember the whole thing had nothing to do with you.
She's like, she's in bed with like a box of chocolates going, now you tell me.
Yeah. She's like, well, it still doesn't matter, does it? Because I'm not going to be auditioning.
But honestly, a lot of people have gotten a lot of work, even during COVID. It's been crazy.
I think it really was a lot of good, a lot of bad, but I think not all bad for sure.
Right.
I just dropped a crystal.
Uh-oh, which one I'm was always, it? It could be important.
It was my husband's carnelian. I'm in his garage.
Oh, I love that you read tarot. I think that's so cool. I've been wanting to be read for a while, but I'm afraid of what the card would say. So
you can't be afraid. There's really no bad card. You know, I mean, obviously that Ten of Swords ain't good, but other than that, you know what? You get red and you just ask them to take that one card out and you're fine.
I was just imagining getting red and the first card down. Son of a bitch.
There it is. It's what Kelly was talking about.
Is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Oh, it's 10. It's 10.
Shoot.
Darn it. So it comes out video on demand the 23rd, just in time for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be on
feelings.
Apple iTunes, Amazon, DirecTV, mm-hmm. all the YouTube, Zoop, Xbox, all the big VODs.
Dang.
You can't miss it.
Right. And people can go to myfionafilm.com mm-hmm. to keep up.
Yep. Keep up. And then my socials are all linked there and I'll have all the info for where it's going. Next week everything will be live up there and I'll have links to all of it.
Are you anticipating a theatrical release at all?
Or? We had a LA theatrical release, which is currently going on right now. And that's been lovely. And I'm excited to let the film have its own life. I'm ready to let it exist outside of us.
Right. You ready to share your baby?
Yeah. And I had a lot of indie filmmaker friends that were like, oh, this part's gonna be really hard letting it go, releasing control. I was like, no, I'm ready. Like I've given, it's almost like it's your own baby. Yeah. I feel like I've given it everything I can give it now. And it's now up. I assume it's a micro version of this. When your kid goes off to college, it's like, I don't know if people are going to like you. What if you're impolite? What if you're an asshole and people don't like you? Like, but it's not our job to, you know, do that for them, that they got to figure it out on their own. So that's kind of the same with the film. It's like, I hope you're loved. I hope things for you, but it's out of my control now.
Right. I'm afraid to tell you it's not college. That's going to be kindergarten for your child.
Good to know.
Yeah. The minute you let them out on their own, you know, they're eating glue, you know, kids breaking their pencils. What are you going to do?
I don't know if I'm cut out for that. It's a lot.
It's a big decision. It really is. But you got time.
I do. Yeah. It's not a decision for today. That's for sure.
Yeah. Read the cards first. See what they say.
Yes. That's the one thing I'm afraid to read on. I won't read on that.
It's like, is that three babies? What does that say?
Three. Yeah. Not the Ten of Swords. Decision made.
All right. Well, it has been such a pleasure talking with you. And I'm honest to God. I love this film. It was so good. And again, I don't do like the romantic, but there was just enough fuckery.
Yes.
That it really touched me. And I got Jane specifically because that's me. That's how I react.
You're a little bit of, I think it's why we vibed so well.
Yeah. I'm so Jane, but it's just, I can't wait for more people to see it. And I know they were like, don't talk about it yet. And I'm like, I can't. So I'm so glad with your permission that now I can start talking about it because, you know, coming soon, VOD, my
Fiona. Yes, please do. Please do.
Because it's so good. It's so
good. Thank you. Oh my goodness. My baby is liked.
Yes. Yes. I am the kindergarten teacher and I like your child.
Thank you. This has been lovely.
Oh, so, so, so much.
Yeah,
you too. Have a good night. Keep in touch.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye, Kelly.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. You know, I close every show with love each other, take care of each other, and watch each other's backs. This film, and more importantly, the actors in this film, bring that home. Sadly, Jeanette Moss, who played the character of Jane so stunningly, so phenomenally, lost her battle with colorectal cancer earlier this year. If you feel that you need to be checked, or you're a healthy person that keeps track of these things, please get yourself checked. You can go to the coloncancerfoundation.org or the coloncancercoalition.org for all sorts of information. Please take care of yourselves. If you suspect something, get it checked out. So, take care of yourself, watch your own back, and love yourself.